Kutov, everybody, we'll get started. And we've been doing Haggalah, and we've been discussing everything we need to know about Kasher Kelim. We went through the sources of how we know to Kasher Kelim. We went through the principle of Kibolo Kach Polto, that when it comes to Kasher Kelim, we have to get out the flavor the same way it was absorbed into the Kli. And then we got into what to do in when it comes to Haggalah. So when it comes to Haggalah, you need to do Haggalah with boiling water. To use boiling water to spit out the flavor that was absorbed into your kli. We said, what do we do with the pot that's too big to put into another pot? So we said that, right, so normal kelim, you kind of just dip them in, right? You boil a pot of water, dip in your kelim, that's called haggalah. And that process of putting it in the boiling water will spit out the flavor that was absorbed into the kli. And therefore, if you want to take your chametz dikka kelim, and make it kosher lePesach, remove the chametz blios from it, the chametz absorption. So then you put it into the boiling water, that'll spit out all the absorbed chametz flavor, and now you'll have a cleany, shiny, fit for Pesach use kli over here. So we said, oh, okay, so that works for small kelim that you can put into another bigger kli, but what about when it comes to big kelim, right? You got a big pot that you want to kosher. What do you do then? So we said that you're going to have to do a self-contained haggalah, which means you're going to have to fill the pot itself. You can't put it in another pot because it won't fit. You're going to have to fill the pot itself with water, get it to a rolling boil, almost to the top. And then we asked, what do you do about the rim, right? Because you have that extra rim space, which you're not able to fill all the way to the top because it'll boil over and it never goes all the way to the top. So how are you going to get the top rim of the kli? So we said there's a bunch of different tricks that one can use for that. In the olden times, they would put in a red hot stone and that would cause all the water to bubble and boil over. We brought Rabbi Kavya's trick. Rabbi Kavya's trick was to put a dough rim around the kli, make kind of a false extension to the pot, and therefore he'd be able to fill it all the way up to the rim. And the bubbles would hit even the rim of the pot. So that was Rabbi Akavya's move.
I don't understand something. You're saying, let's say you have a pot like this.
Yeah.
You're saying, if you fill it up and it overflows, it's not going to go wherever it needs to go?
Yeah, so that will be. Yeah, it has to boil over somehow.
It needs to be boiling hot when it comes to the rim.
So this rim needs to get hit by the boiling water. So if you fill it up, it's only going to go up to here. Right, so it won't actually reach the rim of the pot, which is over here. And sometimes there's going to be treif that's hitting the rim of the pot. You need to kosher that rim, this top lip as well.
Anytime it boils, it goes over. Anytime the water
right,
boils,
I'm saying
it
when
goes
you're
over the rim.
Yes. Yeah, so I'm saying when you kosher it, you now need a boil. You have to hit boiling water over the rim of the pot as well to remove any absorption that might have hit the rim. So that's what Rabbi Akavya did. He had his move. And then there was the putting in the heated stone trick. And then we mentioned a whole bunch of other tricks that a person can use. Other practical ways of exposing the rim of the pot to boiling water. We mentioned the glove trick. You put on a thick rubber glove and then you can kind of splash water over the side. The spoon trick, right? You can kind of wave water with a kli over the rim to cause it to overflow over the sides. And you have to make sure to hit all the sides. So let's say you had a glove, you'd be displacing water on all sides over here, making sure it hits the whole rim of the pot. And we said that if you're going to use something like a spoon or a ladle, you have to make sure that you're not removing the water and then spilling it on the rim of the pot. It has to be that you're pushing the water over the side to make sure that it's still going to be kli rishon water and not now kli sheni water that you're pouring over the rim of the pot. Because since the treif or the milchig or the chametz flavor got absorbed through a kli rishon at the rim, you now have to remove that water using a kli rishon water. If you ladle out the water and then pour it over the rim of the pot, that would now be kli sheni water, or at least suffolk kli sheni water, because there's a whole shaila with the ladle. Topic for a different time. So therefore, make sure you're kind of pushing water over the side so it's still attached to the kli rishon, and it's kli rishon water that's going to be koshering. And then you, so basically any way of getting water over the rim of the pot. One can also tilt the pot over on all sides. This is going to be a little bit more messy than simply taking like a klee or a glove and pushing it over the side. And if a person does that, make sure not to remove the pot from the fire. Do it while it's still on the fire, tilting it over the sides, making sure to hit the whole rim. So that's when it comes to koshering the pot itself, if it's a big pot. Then we mentioned the whole sugya of Evan Meluban, which is how to basically turn water back into Kli Rishon. And that was a whole sugya over here that we got all into countertops. You can chazer that shir over in the Sydney Kollel All Shir and podcast. And we got into countertops, whether Eroi Kli Rishon is enough to kasher countertops, or if a person needs to use Evan Meluban, heating a stone, or more practically to use an iron. Because an iron, you pour a little bit of water, you go over the countertop with an iron, that turns that water back into Kli Rishon water, right? Because as soon as you spill it out from the boiling water urn, it's now Eroi Kli Rishon. If you'd iron it over, though, now you're turning it back into proper Kli Rishon water. And we said because we're machmer for Dover Gush, hitting your countertops, according to the Ramah, therefore some hold that you need something like an Evan Meluban or an actual iron in order to kasher the countertops with Kli Rishon water, because we're machmer that Dover Gush has the status of Kli Rishon. Yeah.
Some people have, like, not me, but difficult family situations, or let's say they're a Baal Teshuva and their parents are like, what are you doing? You're blowtorching the kitchen up.
Yeah.
And then I heard that some people out there or poskim will say that, let's say, the metal kalim we have today, it's so tightly, it's not like in the old days, yes, you have a wooden spoon, it's obviously boileia inside.
We're not saying
bilious, but for our metal kalim, let's say even the poskim, some of them bring by glass,
yeah.
Glass is so, there's no way glass, like,
if so you put smooth.
Milk into a glass,
yeah.
It doesn't penetrate the walls. So what do we say by metal kalim in those situations? Are there people who are makel to say...
Not really. And like none of our poskim are makel, meaning it comes with like commercial grade stainless steel. Like on a scientific level, it's like hardly bolea. It's so tightly the whatever atoms or whatever it is. It's so tightly.
Molecules,
yeah. Yeah, the molecules are so tightly compact that there's hardly any bleos. Definitely not like the metal kalim in the times of Chazal. Nevertheless, we don't see any chiluk being made in the poskim in regards to the only precedent we find is something like glass. Glass has other reasons also. You could see through it and you could see that there's no bleus. By something like metal, you would get more flavor. And typically you could taste a little bit in your metal as well.
They would never use glass for hot things in the old days.
Yeah.
Because they just didn't have the technology.
Yeah.
For heat resistance.
And second of all, Ashkenazim are machmer on glass. According to the Ramah, it's a whole shaila during the year. Okay. But for sure, for Pesach, we're machmer that glass is bole.
Pardon me?
There's a big difference if it's hetera bala or isura bala. So if it's Pesach, it's all isura.
Right. As opposed to
milk and milk.
Okay.
There's more to do.
What about, what about during the year? In those, like, the, I don't know, you have a Baal Teshuva, then Karen's going crazy.
Yeah.
Does he have more room to
For Kalim? And he has to kasher any metal Kalim. I've never heard of poskim that are makel on metal, not to need koshering at all. Even with commercial grade stainless steel, the poskim are machmer. But yeah, that's a.
Why are they machmer if it's not going inside? Why
are they machmer? What? Because it's metal at the end of the day. I don't know. We have what Chazal told us, and it's not even Chazal. It's Deraisa over here. Bedil, Oiferes, all the different Zav, Kesef, the Torah says all these different things, all these different metals need koshering, and that the flavor absorbs. So to say now that it doesn't absorb, you need, I don't know, big shoulders. It pashas, it does absorb a tiny amount, so you're still going to have something that comes in.
Did you say anything about putting baking soda in a boiling pot for it to...
No, I didn't mention that one. I never heard of that.
Never heard of that?
No. You know people who do that? It would work, pashtus.
Yeah,
anything that causes...
Same thing as you were saying about putting the Evan Meluban.
Yeah.
To put in the boiling hot stone in the boiling water.
Yeah.
So baking soda will do the same thing. It just has the effect
the water just going out.
Oh, cool. Okay, so that's another trick that I never heard of, to put baking soda and cause it. And basically, anything that gets it to boil over, hit the rim of the pot, is going to be fine. Okay, so now we're moving on. So that's the sugya of Evan Malubin over there. And we got into steaming counters and all that. So now, the question is, do you need shishim when you're doing Haggalah? Or do you need to wait 24 hours before koshering your kelim? Meaning, do you have to wait when you're koshering your kelim for Pesach, do you have to let your kelim sit for 24 hours without any use before koshering your kelim? Or is it enough to right away grab all your milchik, fleishik kelim, and you can go right away and kosher them? So now we're going to have to get a little bit into...
Are you saying together? You can do them together?
Huh? We'll get into that also. Come on. So first we have to get into how Haggalah works, right? So if you're boiling out, so let's take like a technical look over here, right? You have your kli that you used for chametz. So now if you're going to boil out the chametz flavor from inside of the kli, why doesn't that flavor that's getting boiled out just re-enter the kli through the Haggalah process? Because we know that heat removes flavor, but it also absorbs flavor. So it should be able to cause... Yeah.
Just a philosophical question. How can chametz have a tar?
Mm-hmm. What? Why not? It's Danish. What? It tastes like gluten or carbs. So it has the Danish flavor that's
so
getting
we're
in.
Everything together.
Or pizza flavor in your pizza cli, or right. Pasta flavor in your.
So we have to know what it was, what type of hummus it was, in order to determine what type of tam we're talking about.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm having difficulty with. How can you identify what type of hummus it was? There's so many different sorts of hummus.
Yeah. So it doesn't matter what kind of hummus, because hummus, even b'mashu, the tiniest amount is asur on Pesach. So even the tiniest amount got absorbed, spit back out.
Theorizing that it must have a tam of one of the thousands or millions of forms of tam.
Exactly, yeah.
It must have one of them.
Yeah.
So we're theorizing that's the assumption.
So you use that mixing spoon to mix your pasta. So now we assume the pasta flavor got into your spoon. And now you got to spit out all that flavor from inside your spoon. So the question is, you're going to do Haggalah on that spoon. You're going to put it in the boiling water. So why don't we say the pasta flavor removes, but then it comes right back in to your spoon over here, right? So that's the major question.
when it comes out, you're talking about a very minute quantity into a large amount of water. So I mean, it just disappears into that.
So Tibby's saying that you have a small quantity inside the spoon.
Because that's already diluted. Yeah.
So Tibby's saying you have a small amount inside the spoon that was absorbed. Now it's going to spit out into a large quantity of water, and it's going to be batal. But the major question, but that only works if you have shishim, right? We know it's only batal if you have 60 times. So what that means is we assume that the full volume of the spoon got absorbed. So you need 60 times the spoon in order to effectively be mevatal the flavor inside the spoon. So we're going to see that's what the re holds. You either need shishim in the spoon, or you got to wait for eino banelma.
The flavor is a lot less than the spoon. I mean, you're talking about a minute amount of flavor into a large metal spoon.
But halachically, we say it goes into the full amount of the spoon.
It suddenly becomes a physical entity.
Yeah.
With a physical measure.
Because we don't know how much it absorbs.
Theoretical thing called tam.
Yeah. So we don't know actually how much Isser got absorbed.
No, but there is a physical thing called time. Let's say you have a wooden spoon, right? A wooden spoon, and you put it into pasta.
Yeah, but that's you've physicalized it. You've personalized this concept called time into a physical object.
But if you take that spoon and you smell it or you lick it...
Where's the time here? I don't see any time.
No, I'm sorry. When you take a spoon, the spoon becomes the spoon has a tam chometz, right? So the spoon itself is now chometz. I mean,
we've jumped from tam as a concept
the spoon turns into
a physical discussion point.
Yeah. So once the spoon turns chometz, the entire spoon is chometz.
That's a halakhic rule.
Yeah. So it's a halachic rule because we don't know.
A physical
yeah.
mass.
If we would know, meaning let's say you take a brand new spoon and there's only a tiny drop of hot milk and you dip it into that tiny drop of hot milk, so now we don't assume that the whole spoon absorbed that and it all becomes, you know, milk, like a full volume of milk. We only assume that that tiny amount of milk got absorbed. Why? Because here we know it's a new spoon and we know it couldn't have absorbed more. But in a regular case, right, you dip it into your pasta, you don't know how much flavor it absorbed into the spoon. Therefore, it's a halachic rule. We assume that the whole spoon is a full volume of milchig or chametz or whatever.
Of that time.
I mean, you're asking, you're saying that if I tell you touch the taste of this cake, you can't touch it. Because that's what you're asking, right?
You can't physically quantify the taste.
So maybe it's not quantify
the volume of a pot.
Yeah.
You can physically quantify the volume of a spoon.
So maybe it's not just the aroma or the taste. It's actually, again, if you have a wooden spoon with pasta, some of that pasta flavor, it's not just the taste. The actual pasta is going into that wooden spoon. No? You have a hot wooden spoon with pasta, right? And that's for sure boileia, right? So, again, it's the physical molecules of the food, not about time. That is what time is.
Yeah.
Why can't you just say food?
Yeah.
The food is in there, not the
time. No, so it's a time of the food. Meaning here it's only time, it's only flavor that gets absorbed. And there's a halacha tam ke'ikr, which means that flavor is like the food itself. And that itself is its own chiddush. And the Gemara learns it from tam ke'ikr is the rule.
Yeah. That makes all this analysis.
Yeah, exactly. And the Gemara has two different ways of learning that time is like the
food itself.
Yeah.
It is the food. Or the food is the time.
Yeah. The flavor of a food is usur, just like the food. Meaning, flavor absorption of pig is like eating, if it now comes out into your food, and it's a ben yomo, so it's not tam pagam. So then it's like eating pig itself. You get all the same isurim. And we learn the same thing by nazir, right? A nazir is not allowed to have wine. So it also says that he's also not allowed to have mishrasayin, wine residue that's in his cup or whatever. Why? That's only tam. It's not the actual thing itself. So the Gemara learns from there, that we see from there, tam ke'ikr, that even the flavor of the grapes is asr to a nazir. So too we have by Hagalas Kalim. With the war with Midian, this is how the Chachamim learn out tam ke'ikr in the Gemara. That by the war of Midian, it says that they need to do Hagala, they need a kasher, all the metal kalem. Why? It's only flavor that was absorbed into the kli of non-kosher foods that they cooked in these kalem. So why should you have to kasher them? The Gemara also learns from there, tam ke'ikr, that we see that the flavor is just like the food itself, and therefore you have to kasher them.
Interesting, because in the olden days, they used to store the wine in the clay pots.
Yes.
Therefore, they were able to preserve the wine in the clay pots.
And that's why any kli cheres yishaberu, they had to actually break them because there's no way of koshering them. Because kli cheres, we assume it absorbs to a high degree that you can't actually spit out. Okay, so coming back, so what do you do over here? We have our chametz dik kli. You're gonna put it into the hagala water, and then it's gonna spit out. Why doesn't it come right back in? So says the Ri, quoted by the Rajman source number 9, Vehiksha Rabbeinu Yitzchak, asks Rabbeinu Yitzchak, who is the Ri, Ukle Midyan, Heyachugalu, Sharelo Asra Tura Elakadera Basioma. The clay Midyan, the kelim that they got from the non-Jews, from the spoils of the war of Midyan, how did they do agala on such kelim? The Torah only asers ela kedera bas yomo, a pot that's actually a ben yomo, uma shehi poletes shvachu, anything that it spits up is going to be good flavor, ukashem shepolet masha betocho, chazer ubaleya masha hutzelo. He asks our question. Just like it spits out, it should also then reabsorb back into the kli, and then you're back at stage one, where you have iser inside of your kli. The ef shalomar, and you can't say shakli enu chozer bala mimasha chutzalo, that the kli isn't now doesn't now reabsorb what it spit up. She'ena kli navi, he says a kli isn't a prophet livror masha palat to know what it spit up and not to reabsorb that flavor anymore. Humitoch ma shaboleya, ve'od heyach magilin shnei kelim ke'echad. And furthermore, okay, so now if you put two kalim and you want to kosher two kalim at the same time, how does one not absorb the flavor of another? Even if you want to say that it spits it out and it won't reabsorb, okay, but then it should reabsorb into the other kli, and it shouldn't be mutter to put in two kalim at the same time. So that's Rabbeinu Yitzchak's, the Rig's question, same as our question. Alkein Pirash Rabbeinu Yitzchak. So how does Rabbeinu Yitzchak answer? She'in magilim l'olam ela be'echad mishnei inyanim. That you're only allowed to do Hagalah if you fit one of two criteria. Let's see what they are. Oh, she'yehe magil b'kli kosher. V'she'yehe b'mayim shishim k'neged kol ha'kli shu magil. Either, number one, is to do like what Tibby was saying, to have 60 times the amount of water k'neged the kli, 60 times the kli of water. Therefore, any amount of absorption that's going to come out, it's going to be right away batel in the huge pot of water, and therefore only batel iser is now going to reabsorb into the kli. It's not going to be a problem. So if you have 60 times, you're going to need some big pots over here, right?
60 times the surface area.
Yes.
Of the pot.
No, the full volume. The volume of the pot.
The airspace inside the kli as well.
Yeah.
60 times airspace inside the kli.
No, no.
Oh, no. Yeah. Just
the surface
area. Yeah, the surface area.
Area.
But the whole volume. The volume.
Yeah,
minus the airspace, yeah.
Yeah, not the airspace in the middle.
Yeah, all the volume of a pot. You're going to need some serious mathematicians here to figure out.
That's a calculation of the thickness of the kli times the.
Times the.
Once you make one kosher, you can just keep. Let's say you have 10,000 kalim, right?
Yeah,
you have one big pot.
Yeah.
So you just put in one in at a time, and every time you put it in, it's just batel b'shishim?
So this is a whole separate topic. Over here, it all depend if it's hetera or if it's like what Eli was saying, if chametz is considered hetera or isura before Pesach, and it's a whole machlokas, whether we meaning most people say, and this is the pashas of the Shulchan Aruch, is that chametz is hetera until the fifth hour, and then it turns to Yisura. So while you're doing the Hagala, it's still Hatera Bala, and then you could say Kama Batal, that as you go along, it's going to be Batal every single time. But if you hold that it's Yisura, so then the Isser stays into the calculation over here. So you'll have, let's say, 1/80th is going to be Isser, but then you add another 1/80th, and now you're above the 1/60th mark. And then it'll be chazer.
Why should it make a difference if it's isur or heter? If the principle is batel b'shishim, it should apply regardless whether it's isur or heter, no?
Batel.
No, what I'm saying is like this. I'm asking if, let's say you have 1 to 100 parts, right? So first time we say batel b'shishim, then I say, well, okay. Then the next time you put another keli in, so now you've got 2 to 100, right? So he's saying, well, it makes a difference. If we consider chametz like milk inflation, that they're be'etzem kosher, it just, you can't have it at a specific time altogether, then that works. But if we say, no, chametz is like chazer, then all of a sudden, every time you do 1 to 100 parts, so you do 3 keli, you've got 3 to 100, you're way over batel b'shishim. So you're saying it makes a difference whether it's Isra or Heter. So I'm asking, why is there a difference?
Yeah.
Why is there a difference if it's Chazer or just Fleishigs and you want to get it to Paro?
Yeah. I have to go over the sugya of Kama Batal. But basically, if like you drip Isra into Heter, you have a soup that you're cooking up, and you start dripping drips of milk one at a time. So do we say every single drip of milk now becomes Batal into the thing, and even though you're going to end up with more than shishim, since you did it one drip at a time, now it's going to be heter. Or do we say that no, once you hit over the shishim mark, there's enough milchig in your soup to make it not batel b'shishim anymore, and now your whole soup is going to be aser.
Have you ever come across any discussion of pi amongst the Farshim?
Yeah, there is a whole there's a whole thing about pi and Navi. Navi basically gives a calculation of pi.
Yeah, because I mean, this is all very well, this batel b'shishim, but how do you know if you are shishim or more? I mean, obviously this is all very rough.
The assumption of parts of pots and pans, the assumption is that they're not batel b'shishim. That
So you start with a presumption.
Yes.
What do you mean? What do you mean they're not basal shishim?
The pot itself does not have shishim inside of it compared to the clay itself.
The walls of the pot. Meaning the shach says that unless you have a really big and thin-walled kli, like probably those cheap, massive Kmart pots that you buy, so unless you have a very big and very thin-walled kli, you're generally not going to have the volume of shishim of the walls connected what's inside. So meaning, let's say you have a treif pot, you fill it all up with water. So now, do we say that there's enough water inside? If I filled it all the way into the top, that it's going to have shishim connected the sides, and whatever's cooking inside. The sides will be batel, and my water is going to be still kosher. So the shach says that unless you have a really big, thin-walled kli, you generally can't assume that you have shishim of the walls connected what's inside. So it's a good shach to know. It does come up a lot. Okay, so back into our sugya. So we have
so that means
method
you never
number
touch
one.
Your kli by just putting boiling water in it.
No, you can't. You can't use your kli, which you just put, which is treif kli. You can't use that to make pasta. Because now what's inside is a problem.
Correct.
You'll need
and even if you fill it up with boiling water, you still...
No, then you can kasher your kli by itself. That's fine.
Yeah.
Why?
So kashering... Okay, so we'll have to see. This is going to tie into...
This is like
clean
a
water.
Three-volume Shulchan Aruch.
The shear is getting crazy.
Yeah, this is all very
it's good, though. We're getting into the... We're using this as a springboard to get into the Ikaran of...
This is such an enormous sugya.
Yeah.
When one would think that this is so foundational, you know?
Yeah.
And it should be every day... Halacha lamaase, why is it so complicated?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That's what I find so amazing. This is every minute of the day in the kitchen.
Yeah, yeah. So again, like everything has like an exact science of how it's working, right?
So therefore, you must have separate.
Yeah. So any nutritionist, there's like endless amounts, right? You can get into how the omegas are working in the body and like lowering inflammation and how the mechanism works. Same thing when it comes to halacha. This is the reality of the universe. It has to be at least as complex as
the. At the end of the day, should be simple. The psak should be this is what you do and that's it.
Yeah.
You have a kosher kitchen, of Pesach kitchen, and the rest of the year kitchen. Just use Pesach kalim, and this is for the fringe who can't afford Pesach, kosher the Pesach kalim, isn't it?
I don't know. I kosher my kalim. I don't buy new ones.
Is that right?
Yeah, I kosher my kalim.
You're really an interesting person because you're one of the few
in Israel. Everybody does it. Just go out in the street. Everybody does it in Israel.
Yeah, everyone does it.
I wonder whether that's like a sort of a ritual that they like to get around, like you know, the village.
Boss.
There, you go to there and you sort of walk, compare it. You know,
you got
your trials and tribulations of cleaning for Pesach, or whether it's really necessary.
Yeah.
You know. Because the amount of kalim sold before Pesach in Israel is unbelievable.
Yeah.
Every supermarket full of new,
new kalim
new being sold. There's
reason for that. So that's the easy way out, you know, just
the
Amazon, your new...
But it's the norm. It's not,
but everybody's koshering something,
amount.
Right? Even Kosos...
If you go to every house in Israel, they have their kosher.
So just burn out the whole Shulchan Aruch because today you can just go and buy 50,000.
I kosher everything. I kosher my coffee,
like
my metal coffee cups.
I like to go away for Pesach, then I don't have to worry about
anything. Yeah. That's just don't worry about everything.
We are living a different life today.
Wow. So you don't kosher anything?
I used to when I was unfortunately in Shiva Bocha. Why did I do that? Because there were certain things that, you know, was very essential, like, you know, that are expensive. But,
Okay, so let's at least finish this read. This is our one source over here. And we'll come back to this. So we have first, so says the read that you're therefore, you're going to need either one of two things, either that you have shishim in the pot connected the kli. That's going to be our first thing. The kevin shehei b'mayim shisha connected kol akli harei kol pleitas akli batla lahem. Therefore, anything that spits out of the kli is going to be batel klei midyan lahugalo ala kelim ketanim b'tol kelim gedolem. Now says the Riya big chiddush that now you're going to have to assume that when it came to the klei midyan, they were using small kelim where you actually had shishim connected the small kli. Right, that's a big umdana that he's adding in over there. B'tor kelim gedolim shahaya b'mayim shishin kenegdan v'chein efshar od lahagil kli she'eno ben yomo. He says either you're going to have shishim, keneged, the small kelim, or it's going to have to be that you're doing hagalah on a kli that's not a ben yomo. Now that it's a kli she'ino ben yomo, the flavor inside is already bad flavor. It's tam pogum. It's a disgusting flavor that went rye. And therefore, ve'in mashkichim b'shir ha'mayim sh'arei kol ma sh'niflet bein hu bein hakli sh'magilim mitocho lefagamhu. And therefore, even if you don't have shishim, keneged the kli, since it's tam pogum, it's after 24 hours, you let the kli sit for 24 hours, you can assume that the flavor that was absorbed inside the kli is not good flavor anymore, and therefore even what gets spit out, betoch lefagamhu, ve'afal pi shechozer uvoleya, ein bakach klum, ve'nosan tam lefagam mutar. So now that it's reabsorbed, it's no longer usser. Why? So it's a question over here. And the Rajba explains because Chazal only ushered tam pogum that's inside of a kli if it was absorbed as good tam, and then it became tam pogum. But if it was absorbed as tam pogum, then Chazal never ushered it, and therefore once it spits out, it's okay that it'll reabsorb into the kli. So what the Ri is basically saying is that you can only do Hagalah on either a kli that's eno ben yomo or a kli that you have shishim kenegdo. Otherwise, we're going to have to assume that the flavor gets reabsorbed. The Ramban, quoted also by the Ra'a in Bedek HaBayis, he says that no, there's a special dispensation when it comes to Hagalah by Kelim. And he says this in source number 10, Va'nachum bazek Moshe Pirsh Mori Rabbeinu Moshe. This is what Rabbeinu Moshe says. The Mayim bekelim aflitim umamrikim akli ve'inan mavliyim. That when it comes to Hagalah, the flavor only gets spit out of the way it works, flavor only gets spit out. Ve'inan mavliyim, it doesn't reabsorb. V'hainu damrinim b'sifri le'inan Hagalah, b'mayim v'lo b'yayim v'lo b'chalav v'lo b'shar mashim.
So he's okay. Talking about a physical thing, the source of the heat is doing some sort of pushing, but not pulling.
Exactly. So the force of heat is doing some kind of pushing. So that's going to be a major...
Because waves radiate one way.
Out but not back in. Okay. So basically, we're going to have this big machlokas between the Ri and the Ramban, whether one can do Hagalah on Ben Yomo Kalim or not. According to the Ramban, Mayim is only maflit veino mavliya. Therefore, you can do Hagalah even on a kli that's a ben yomo. You could take your ben yomo kelim for which were just used to mix your pasta, and that same day, right away, you can do Hagalah on those kelim. You don't need to let them wait for 24 hours. But according to the Ri, no. If you either you're going to need shishim, can I get the pot, or you're going to need that you let them sit for 24 hours. Before actually kashering them. What does the Shulchan Aruch say? Source number 12. Yish li zar lahago kodem shal chamishis, kedei shelo yitztarich ledaktik im akelem ben yomo umlav. So says the Shulchan Aruch that as long as you do it before the fifth hour, when chametz actually becomes iser, so then it's okay to use even ben yomo kelem, meaning he paskins like the Ramban. That you can kasher your kelim right away. However, the Mishnah Berurah says in source number 13, v'kol zeh midina, this is all me'ikar hadin, aval kevar nohagu lechatchila lahachmer b'chol achumros, v'afilu imaga b'shal dal l'rokodem, but we are machmer lechatchila, all these chumras, because when it comes to Pesach, that is particularly the Ashkenazim, we're up and above, beyond, we're super machmer.
Never say that to a Sephardi.
What?
Never say that to
I mean, Sephardim also, Sephardim also. Cause
they always think they're more machmer than Ashkenazim.
I don't know. I think when it comes to Kitnius, they pick some bones with us.
Kitnius, yeah. That's machmir. They're machmir about the tradition of Kitnius.
They are
machmir.
Yeah.
That's the whole
Makamoikis. They
are very machmir.
So basically, the Mishnah Berurah says that l'chatchila, we should be machmir on all the chumras that are possible, meaning even before the fifth hour, when chumet yet isn't iser. So not to do Hagalah before waiting 24 hours, l'chatchila. If you need to, then you can do it. There's a special trick that if one doesn't, he forgets last minute. oh man, I forgot to kosher that that spoon or that coffee mug or whatever it is that he needs to kosher, and there's it's within 24 hours of Pesach, so we can't let it sit for 24 hours. So there is a trick, you could add some soap to the water. Because what's the soap is going to be pogam the water, so therefore as soon as the water spits out, it becomes pagam water. So even if it reabsorbs, not going to be a problem. And that's what they do in these big, if you go to Eretz Yisrael, he was mentioning Dr. Eichel, that they have the big vats where they do Haggalah. They don't know, right? They can't check into everybody's kelim and have them fill a checklist. Did you wait 24 hours for your kelim or not? People could be bringing ben yomo kelim. That's going to put chametz ben yomo into the water. And then it's going to get into everybody else's kelim. So what do? They pour a little bit of soap into the water. Now it's pagam water. And even if it's a ben yomo... What?
But the big vat will have...
I know, but you're not going to have shishim connected all the kelim that come in.
But they do one at a time.
What?
They do one at a time.
Yeah, so it'll get into this kama bottle machlokes.
Yeah, each one is its own unique over here. Case, as what Eli's saying. So how can you be worried about what other people do? Because you're only assuming that one...
Yeah. So you might have Ali's thing also. Like if we say it's a Tera, then you have kama batal. Okay, but yeah, that's basically what they do.
It's probably also for the person who's actually coming to bring a tray pot, chametz pot. They don't realize that they need to wait 24 hours.
Right. So they're putting it within 24 hours.
They wouldn't even know.
And they don't know, right?
You could
kosher your tray pot also. Okay, so that's where we're coming out in regards to waiting 24 hours. Does a person have to wait 24 hours or not? The answer is Me'ikar Hadin, no. The Shulchan Aruch paskins before the fifth hour, Chametz is Hetera, and we can rely on the Ramban. However, the Mishnah Berurah says that we should really be Machmer, and therefore a person should wait 24 hours. If he's within the 24-hour mark and he forgets of Pesach, he forgot, I got to kosher something last minute. So what you should do is pour a little bit of soap in your water. That way, any flavor that comes out will be batel, and it won't reabsorb as chametz back into your kli. All right, shkoich, everybody.